Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast. I am your host, as always, Jesse Collings, and I am speaking to you with a little bit of bonus content, which I'm sure you're aware of because you clicked on this podcast. This is not going to be a typical episode. I just was at the Dynamite that was in Boston this past evening, and it was just one of those shows and one of those experiences where I got out of the venue and I was like super wired, and I went home and I was eating dinner and I was like, I gotta talk about this show. I gotta talk about my experience. And it was just such an exciting event to attend live. I have to stay up late and talk to you guys about it. So hopefully this is up by the morning time for morning commutes or just people listening to it when they're still hyped up about the show, which I've seen has gotten a lot of praise online. So it was not just a great live experience for me, but a great show overall received by everyone watching at home. So for starters, this is the first show AEW has ever run at this venue. This was at the MGM Music Hall at Fenway Park. So if you are unfamiliar with this venue, this was opened a couple of years ago. I think it opened in maybe 2023. And it is basically a small music and concert venue that they built basically inside Fenway Park. It's kind of like at the edge of the ballpark. It's obvious there's obviously not like a lot of space within the park itself to build a concert venue, but they kind of built this experimental concert venue. I have never been there before until tonight. I've heard really good things about it from people that have been there live. I think my parents went to go see Sting from the Police there last year. But it's typically a concert venue, and you could kind of feel that when you were in the building. I know a lot of people said it looked different on TV. I haven't watched a single second of the television, so I can't comment on that. But it definitely was different than the other venues you typically see wrestling in, especially wrestling at this level. They had been, you know, in Boston, they had run the Aganis Arena, which is on the campus of Boston University and is like kind of like your standard like 5,000 seat hockey slash basketball venue that is, you know, littered all over this country. And AEW has kind of run in a ton over the years. They've also run at the TD Garden, which is where the Bruins and the Celtics play. That's like their big venue. So this is very much an experimental venue. This is smaller than those venues. Again, the seats about 4,500, and obviously the TD Garden seats, you know, up to 18,000-19,000 probably for wrestling if you really wanted to. But this seats about 3,500, and it was a sold-out show, according to WrestleTix. They even had standing room only seats that were opened up. So when you were, if you, you know, walked past where like the back row of the seats were, you could see people standing up, and there was a good crowd doing that. So they pretty much packed as many people as they possibly could in this Dynamite. I think it came out to about 3,500. So obviously not like a gigantic crowd in terms of crowd size. And I did, when I attended as a member of the media, because I'm a very extremely important person. So I attended as a media member, but I was picking up my ticket from the box office, And I saw that tickets were on sale at the box office for $27. So I didn't ask about those, but I assume those are probably the standing room only tickets. And $27, obviously really affordable in terms of tickets. So not sure what the gate was for the show or anything, but they are running tomorrow, Collision. And I believe that show is not sold out. It's got quite a long ways to go before it's sold out. I have a press pass for tomorrow's show, but I'm not going to be able to attend, I don't think, because I'm going to have to actually work my real job during that time period, and I'm just not going to be able to make it to Boston in that time period. So I will not be able to see Collision. But this Dynamite show, so first time ever at this venue, and obviously like a brand new venue. I heard people say it was compared to kind of like Hammerstein Ballroom, watching it on TV. You could see, you know, there's three decks kind of like Hammerstein. So it doesn't look like a traditional venue at all. The ring looked smaller to me live. It looked considerably smaller than it normally is. It might have been just I was sitting closer. The angle might have been different. I don't know if the wrestlers worked really any differently, but the ring looked smaller. It looked significantly smaller, but that might just be kind of an optical illusion from where I was sitting. So going into the show, one thing I was on the lookout for was, like, I was kind of curious, like, what kind of merchandise people were wearing, and also kind of like, what kind of crowd is this show attracting? And I had heard from people, like, they went to an AEW show and they saw a lot of people wearing WWE stuff, WWE merchandise. I was really looking for it and didn't see a lot. I think I saw one or two shirts here or there, but it was mostly AEW merchandise, if they were wearing any like merchandise at all. A lot of like Kenny Omega shirts, some Will Ospreay stuff, Mercedes Moné stuff. They're doing like, I think this is going to become a theme every time AEW runs in Boston, is going to be get like Mercedes Moné's show. Obviously, the last time they were in Boston before tonight was her debut, the big business show, which was entirely built around her. And you get the sense that this show, while not entirely built around Mercedes, there was a lot of other stuff there. They view her as a big, big star in Boston, which is cool. I think this is something that AEW should do for all of its wrestlers in all of their hometowns. And I think they do a pretty good job in the most cases. But they make sure, I think, at least for the first two times they've been here, and I'm sure they'll continue to do that in the future, like Mercedes is going to have something really significant for every time they're in Boston, because she's the hometown star and there's a considerable amount of people there that are really there to see her. When I was waiting in line, there were people just handing out these homemade signs, like a big, like massive stack of little homemade signs. They said something like Moné Talks or something like that. I think they were had two sides to them. I didn't really get a great look at them, but you could see people holding them up. I'm sure they made it to TV. That was kind of neat. Like, I don't know if that's like something that Mercedes was orchestrating herself or the company, or these are just independent people trying to get as many people holding these signs as possible. But it was kind of cool to see that kind of ingenuity in place. I got to the venue. I was probably in my seat a little bit before 7 p.m. because I figured there would be a lot of like pre-show stuff, like Ring of Honor tapings or whatever. And there really wasn't a ton of that. They didn't really start like with any preliminary matches until around 7:30. So for like the first 30 minutes, it was like I was watching a WWE PLE, where I was just watching like a lot of recap videos. I watched like a whole episode of Meal in a Match with Mercedes Moné and Renee Paquette and RJ City, watching a Joshi six-woman tag from Double or Nothing that I had completely forgot about. That was the Aja Kong match. I was kind of sitting in the venue and I was like, this is kind of lame. Like, can we get some preliminary workers out here just to have like a 5-minute match? That's kind of why I was there. I was like, where's Hot Stuff Tracy Williams? Where's Taven and Bennett? They're supposed to be on every Boston show. Where are they? So I was a little disappointed that we didn't get a lot of action before Dynamite started, we did get two matches. The first match was Red Velvet versus La Catalina. This was for the TV Women's title, the ROH Women's Television title. It was just whatever. It wasn't really that good of a match. Red Velvet retained in kind of like an awkward finish with her submission. I didn't think this match was very good, but it was just the opening match, so it was whatever. Also, these are spoilers for the Ring of Honor show, in case you're planning on watching that show. These are going to be some spoilers for this. I don't know when these are going to air, of course, but the second match was far more interesting. The second match was Michael Oku versus Nick Wayne. Now, to my knowledge, this is Michael Oku's first match in like the Tony Khan verse. He did have one match on the Jericho Cruise earlier this year, which is, I guess AEW affiliated in a lot of ways. But this was his first kind of match in AEW Ring of Honor proper. He came out, didn't really get like a huge reaction. I don't think a lot of people knew who he was. But he came out and he wrestled Nick Wayne. And this ended up being a pretty exciting match. And this is when I knew we were going to get like a really good crowd for this Dynamite. I kind of figured in general, just because it always seems like Boston has good crowds. But they got really into Michael Oku. And they got really into booing Nick Wayne. This was a really fun kind of pre-show match. It's going to be on Ring of Honor, but it's a pre-show for Dynamite. Michael Oku, I think, is a really interesting person to follow because I think he's really limited in certain ways. What he's really good at is that he's a very good underdog babyface. He obviously has, a really skinny physique. He's not a big guy. He can do some exciting stuff in the ring, but he's not like an uber athlete. He's not like Rey Mysterio or Amazing Red or one of these really small guys that can do all this kind of crazy stuff. He's not, he's athletic enough and he's coordinated, but he's not like a super duper high flyer kind of guy. Those are the kind of guys that kind of get away with being that small, but he can sell and he can really get a crowd behind him. And he really excelled, on the UK indies, building that relationship with those fans. So when he would work these big matches at York Hall in front of the kind of the same fans that have been watching him for years and years, there was a really strong emotional connection between him and those fans in the British Indies, which is really impressive. But it's really hard to think about that relationship translating to, a national or global television product. He's kind of like a small room wrestler, not a big room wrestler. That being said, I think he acclimated himself really well to this spot in Ring of Honor. The crowd didn't really know a lot about him, but they were into him in his struggle as a babyface during the match. And I was sitting next to Justin Barrasso, formerly of Sports Illustrated, for this show. And he said, this is a great – Ring of Honor is a great spot for him if he's going to need to develop that kind of chemistry and crowd support. It's a nice organic spot for Michael Oku to be before maybe introducing him onto the AEW main roster. And I think that it would be a mistake to just – toss him out on an episode of Dynamite and use him the way like they're using like a Kevin Knight or Commander or some of these other guys, young guys that they kind of have potential, but are kind of just putting them in a certain slot. I think he's going to get lost in the shuffle really fast if that's the case. I think they should start really small with him on Ring of Honor and build him up slowly. And that's probably the best way for him to find success, I think. I think if they threw him on Dynamite right now, even if they used him on a regular basis, I don't think it would really help him a ton. I think I like the idea of him being on Ring of Honor. And Nick Wayne, this is my first time ever seeing him live in person, I think. And you can just see the confidence is building in him, where I think he's doing a really good job as a heel. And you can just see the star machine beginning to whirl inside him. He's still only 19 years old. He's still super young, but you can just see the confidence growing, the maturity in the ring growing. Because when I first started watching him wrestle, which is he was probably 16 or 17 years old. It was only a few years ago. The thing with Nick was that he was really mature from a technical standpoint for someone that was of his experience level. Like, he could do a lot of cool moves. He was pretty clean. He could bump and he could sell and he could do all this stuff, which was really impressive for his age. But he didn't have like a star quality about him. He didn't have that kind of open charisma. The charisma for him was that he was so young and people were so interested in seeing someone so young wrestle. Now you can just start to see the crowd connection, the understanding of how to build heats, the understanding of how to play to the crowd. The act with his mom is nice in helping that. And you're just seeing, I think, a lot more maturity for him, which again is hugely impressive because he's already 19. He is so far ahead of the game compared to a lot of wrestlers who have not even started by the time that they're 19. He wins this match. Kip Sabian interferes and kind of costs Michael Oku the match. So you can maybe see Michael Oku versus Kip Sabian as kind of a, getting Michael Oku's feet wet in Ring of Honor. I think that's a fine feud for him to get started in. And it gives Nick Wayne a win on Ring of Honor, which is good. And what was kind of interesting about this, and I thought this with both Nick Wayne and Kip Sabian, who both got really good reactions in the sense that the crowd really booed them, is that AEW does have a few of these guys that are just like shitty heels. The crowd is really, at least this crowd, the crowd is really respondent to them. They get a lot of heat when they come out and do stuff. I'm sure people noticed it during the six-man tag main event, just how much heat Wheeler Yuta gets from the audience. The crowd just absolutely hates him. And it's one of those things where you can say, well, is it go-away heat? How productive is it really? Is it fans invested in seeing this guy lose, or they just kind of want him off of their TV screen? There's a lot of nuance to that. That's the thing, it's kind of hard to fully diagnose. But I do just know when I was there live, these guys, Kip Sabian, Nick Wayne, Wheeler Yuta, they were getting really big reactions from the crowd. And the crowds were into the baby faces as a result. They were into seeing Samoa Joe and Shibata and Powerhouse Hobbs beat Wheeler Yuta. They were into seeing, they felt bad for Michael Oku that Kip Sabian cost them the match. So I don't know how I feel about having so many of those guys. And it's kind of like one of those Dominic Mysterio things where it's like, people kind of resent this wrestler because they feel like they're being overpushed and they kind of just think they're like not, they don't take them credibly as a badass. So it's just kind of hard for them. They're kind of frustrated with those wrestlers being on their TV screen. That's probably part of it, but it definitely led to a good live experience as a fan, seeing those kind of performers get that kind of reaction and the kind of impact that had on the matches that they were participating in. So we'll get to the main show. We start with Mercedes Moné versus Athena, which I was surprised by. I thought it was going to be the main event. I figured the first match would be Takeshita versus Will Ospreay, but instead they went in that Moné and Athena would be the main event. Instead, they kind of flipped things around. I think that made sense by the time, knowing that they were doing the title change at the end of the show. And they want to go off the air with that kind of thing with Samoa Joe and everyone celebrating the ring. So I understand why Athena and Mercedes Moné got the opening match instead. This is something that's kind of interesting. Like, there's a lot of discussions about the main event slot in AEW and do women get the fair opportunities to main event, whether that's a pay-per-view or whether that's Dynamite. And the answer is no. Obviously, women don't get a fair chance of doing that because it happens very rarely. And I think some fans maybe were frustrated that this Athena Monet match, which felt like it easily could be the main event of the show, was not the main event of the show. It was the opening match. And it's an interesting conversation because I think a lot of fans focus on what match goes on last. That's the main event. That's the most important match. And I understand why they do that. But to me, it's hard for me to really care that much about that. Like, to me, this Athena versus Monet match was given a prime slot, the opening match on Dynamite, opening segment on Dynamite. If you look historically about who gets those opportunities, it's usually the biggest star in the company gets the opening match. Oftentimes, the biggest match on a Dynamite is the first match, not the main event. Sometimes the main event is a secondary match. So I have a hard time like being like, oh, of course Tony didn't put the women in the main event because, okay, well, that's kind of like a semantic argument. Like, oh, well, it wasn't the match that went on last, so it shows that Tony doesn't really believe in the women. I really disagree with that. I saw him give basically 30 minutes at the start of the show to two women. So I think this was a huge success from a women's wrestling standpoint. The match itself was really exciting. Monet was really over in Boston, as you would expect. She got a huge reaction. Definitely one of the most popular wrestlers on the show. And Athena, you know, for someone that had been mainly siloed onto Ring of Honor and hadn't really done a ton on AEW proper, the fans, at least in attendance tonight, were really aware of how good she was and were really into her as well. Not as much as Monet, but she got plenty of support from the crowd. I don't know if that came across on television at all, but it was really noticeable live that Athena was over with the fans. The match itself, I thought, was really good. I thought it kind of fell apart during the closing stretch, or probably like in the final 7 to 8 minutes. It was really ambitious. They tried to do a lot of stuff. There were a lot of exchanges. Like, they did this big like tombstone reversal exchange over and over again. They did a lot of stuff like on the apron, you know, threatening to do suplexes on the apron and things like that. There just wasn't a sharpness there, and it kind of felt sloppy at times. That kind of happens with some Mercedes matches, and that's actually kind of okay. It kind of makes the matches feel exciting, more exciting a lot of the time. I just felt like it was kind of like I said, like during the match, I said to Justin Barrasso, like, this is kind of like falling apart. And Justin said, oh, I think, you know, they're going to get like 10 more minutes. And he was right. They did keep going. And I think by the time they got to the finish, everything was fine. It wasn't, I don't want to say, like, I'm looking at it right now. This is very early on Cage Match. It has a 9.58, which is right around like match of the year status. And I didn't feel like it was a match of the year. But was this, you know, a 4+ star match? Absolutely. Was it a huge feather in the cap for both of these women? Of course. I will say that I said on this show, I think it was in fall of last year, that Mercedes Moné, I thought, was like a huge bust in AEW. I thought she hadn't delivered at all with what they were expecting, both from a business and from a performance perspective. But I totally have changed my opinion on that. I think she's had an amazing year, especially this year so far, and it's only April. I think she comes across like the biggest women's wrestling star in the world. I think that she is emerged as being super dependable in the ring. She's having a lot of good matches with a variety of opponents. I think we can agree that Athena is, you know, a high quality opponent. So I think a lot of people could have a really good match with Athena, but Mercedes is getting pretty entertaining matches out of the likes of people like Billy Starks and people that are really hit or miss. But she's been sensational this year. She's having an amazing year so far, and it's only in April, and I expect that to continue. After this match, they do the Toni Storm thing where they play her music and she's just kind of up on the balcony. Doesn't do anything, just kind of stares and looks at Mercedes. But she got a gigantic pop when her music hit. I'd be kind of interested in seeing, like, going to a live show where Toni wrestles. But just her music hit and she got one of the two or three biggest reactions of the night. Just gigantic. gigantic pop for her in the building. And her versus Mercedes, which they're clearly heavily teasing. And it's kind of weird because Mercedes is TBS champion. Tony is the world champion. Are they going to do like a champion versus champion? Are they going to unify the titles? Is someone going to be an undisputed champion? But clearly they are working towards Tony versus Mercedes, which is easily the biggest women's match they can do. And at this point, one of the biggest matches they can do, period. And that is a match that could main event a pay-per-view if they choose to do so. It's just, it feels like they're building towards what would be a really special match for AEW. So that's really exciting if you're a fan of those wrestlers. I'm sure certainly excited about the possibility of it. After that, something really strange happened, and I was told this did get shown on television, but they were must have been a commercial break or something, and they bring out the Stanley Cup and they put it on a table, and they had previously had the Owen Hart Memorial Tournament trophy on this table. So it was like they got rid of that trophy and replaced it with the Stanley Cup. And Justin Barrasso and someone else I was sitting with, they were like, whoa, that's the Stanley Cup, right? And I'm like, yeah, that is the Stanley Cup. I mean, it's not the actual Stanley Cup, but it's definitely supposed to be the Stanley Cup. And then like you could see like it was on a tablecloth that had the NHL logo on it. And there was a guy there that was like holding it with gloves. And I was like, wow, this must be like a bit for gonna do a promo segment. It's gonna involve the Stanley Cup for some reason. I don't know what's going on, but maybe it's like an MJF thing or whatever. But then they just, Tuukka Rask, who was a goalie for the Bruins, and I believe he's retired now, but as a, you know, your typical local sporting hero, I have to look this up. Actually, I'm going to do that right now because I don't think Tuukka Rask, the Bruins won the Stanley Cup in 2010. And I don't think Tuukka Rask was the starting goalie on that team. I'm pretty sure that was Tim Thomas. So it's kind of weird for him to, I guess he did. He was on. So he's a backup of 2011 when they won the Stanley Cup. He made the Stanley Cup finals twice as a starting goaltender, but did not win. But anyway, Tuukka Rask, who's a Finnish hockey goalie, he was at Dynamite, and they just said, "Hey, everybody, it's Tuukka Rask!" And like, of course, he got a big pop because everyone there are Bruins fans. Everyone recognizes him, and like he goes like, "Yeah!" And then he just goes away. And I was told that this was shown on television, and I just don't know why.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums, and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
It was so strange that Tuukka Rask was just randomly at this episode of Dynamite. Not like in the crowd, but just like on stage, and that they aired it. It was just odd. I maybe he's a big wrestling fan. I have no idea. Kristaps Porzingis of the Celtics was also there. It was kind of funny because during the Mercedes Moné versus Athena match, they're just a really loud "Let's go Celtics" chant breaks out. And I was like, that's kind of weird, but at the same time, like, hey, yeah, we're in Boston. The playoffs are about to start. People are into the Celtics. Maybe there's probably like a fan wearing a Celtics shirt or something that they showed on camera or something like that. But then I hear people chanting for Kristaps Porzingis. And I was like, wait, is Kristaps Porzingis here? And it turns out he was there. We couldn't see him because I was sitting in like a balcony area, and he, I guess, was located directly underneath me. So I couldn't really be able to see him. But I guess he was sitting probably close to the front row. And I believe they did eventually show him on television. But in case you're wondering why there were random Celtics chants during the Monet versus Athena match, It was because the Celtics center, Kristaps Porzingis, was there live. Don't know. I was thinking, like, I hope they don't show him standing next to any wrestlers, because Kristaps Porzingis is 7'3" tall. So he would have made any wrestler except Satnam Singh look really small if they were standing next to him. So I hope they didn't do that. But that was kind of cool. I guess he's a big wrestling fan. He was during the Celtics championship parade last year. He was like holding like one of the WWE title belts, and he was like waving it around. So I don't know if maybe he's a big wrestling fan. He must be if he decided to go to Dynamite tonight. So that was cool that he was there. I feel bad for anyone that was sitting behind him. This is like worst case scenario. You go to a live show and someone over 7 feet tall is sitting in front of you. But anyway, that was also strange. So Tuukka Rask and Kristaps Porzingis were both at this Dynamite. So a big day for like Northern European Boston sporting heroes. Next match up was Adam Page versus Josh Alexander. Josh Alexander comes out as the mystery man in this tournament, the wild card. I think he was one of the favorites to be in the spot. We knew he was coming to Dynamite. This was a spot to debut him. And I thought they had a solid match. It was kind of, you know, it wasn't an amazing match, but I thought it was pretty good. Hangman is obviously over with the crowd. I think seemed decently into Josh Alexander. There were definitely some people there that weren't really familiar with him all that much, didn't really know his signature moves, didn't really know that much about him. But I mean, you look at Josh Alexander and you can kind of see like, okay, this guy looks like a tough guy. He looks like a badass. There's not like necessarily a huge learning curve to understanding Josh Alexander. So I feel like that is going to work out okay. I do think that he might struggle to stand out in AEW's roster. He's a very good wrestler. That's not a problem. He's got a good look, but it's tough to be a singles wrestler in AEW. On this roster and really stand out. The standard is really high when you're talking about, you know, Hangman Page and Will Ospreay and MJF and Swerve and Moxley. It's just a really high standard to really stand out. So I was thinking about this and I was like, when I was watching this match, I was like, he needs to have some really strong creative behind him. Like he should be pushed like he's an unstoppable monster. Or this go on a huge winning streak or be really protected, I think, to really stand out, because otherwise I'm afraid he's going to get lost in the shuffle. That being said, what do they do with him? Okay, so he loses a match to Hangman Page. They give Alexander a lot. Page wins with a roll-up, so it definitely wasn't something. They weren't just going to, you know, immediately beat this guy. They gave him a lot. They protected him with the finish. And then, you know, Kyle Fletcher comes out to confront Hangman because they're facing each other in the next round of the Owen Cup. And you see like Callis whisper something to Josh Alexander, clearly presenting him some sort of opportunity if he would beat up Hangman, which he then does. So it looks like he's going to be slotted into the Don Callis family. And I do know that Mark Davis recently got injured, so there's an opportunity there for someone to slide into the Mark Davis role. Which isn't necessarily a glamorous role. He's gonna basically be a pin eater for the Takeshita Fletcher group. But it is something, and obviously it, you know, cements Alexander as a firm heel in AEW, and will probably get him a lot of TV stuff. And honestly, AEW needs more wrestlers who can just lose on television a lot in it for them to be okay. Because we see this with a lot of wrestlers, kind of like the wrestlers that can lose a lot often end up getting a lot of TV matches. We see a lot of Air Fox TV matches, which I'm a fan of because I like Air Fox and I think he's an underrated wrestler, and I'll always respect his willingness to land on his head for my own entertainment. But one of the reasons I feel like we see a lot of Air Fox matches is because he's someone that you can just beat and it's okay because you're not really protecting him. But you need someone to go out there, have an entertaining 8-minute match with somebody, and eventually put them over. And in AEW, everyone is so protected all the time that sometimes it works against talent that you want to showcase because you're afraid to put them in a situation where they're going to lose. So I do think that there's an opportunity here for a wrestler like Josh Alexander that's looking for a way to stand out from the crowd to get a lot of TV time, which is to be a guy that can lose matches. Is that a path that is eventually going to lead him to winning the AEW World Championship? I don't think so, but that's probably unlikely anyway when you look at the roster that AEW has. But is this a good spot for Josh Alexander to be at this stage of his career? I think so. I think it's fair, and I think he can really excel in it because he is a very good wrestler, and he can have matches just like the one he had with Adam Page tonight, and I think that'll work out in his favor. The next match we have is the Hurt Syndicate versus the Gates of Agony. The Hurt Syndicate was very, very over, as we saw, and I'm sure everyone heard. They were over in the building. The Gates of Agony were just kind of there to lose. I think everyone knew that. The Gates of Agony, I like a lot of things about them. I like their size. I like their physicality. I think the guys work hard. There were parts of this match where just like, I think things were moving too fast for them, especially for Toa Leona. I think he really struggled at times. They did a lot of this was them working over Bishop Khan and then Toa kind of getting the hot tag. Didn't really handle the hot tag as well as he probably could have, because I think there was some sloppiness involved. So the match itself was just kind of there. It wasn't a bad match, but on this show, it definitely didn't stand out. I think this is easily the weakest match on the show. The Hurt Syndicate were over. I will say Shelton Benjamin, Shelton Benjamin is just a gigantic human being. I don't think people really appreciate how big this guy is. Like, if you were in the gym and you saw Shelton Benjamin walk by, you'd be like, whoa, that guy is like fucking enormous. He looks like he's the same size as Bobby Lashley. He might be taller than Lashley. Maybe Lashley's a little bit wider and a little bit more cut, but Shelton Benjamin, for his age, is gigantic. And this is the best run that Shelton Benjamin has had in 20 years. Ever since his WWE career was derailed when they decided it would be a good idea to give him a mammy character, I don't think he has been any better than he is right now, pretty much since like 2005. He is because the idea was they kind of brought him in, and the idea was that he was going to be like this job guy to protect Lashley, but he's been so good and he's gotten over that they're like, we can't really have this guy lose a lot of matches. So now him and Lashley are, I think Lashley's still like the big star in the group, but Benjamin's not that far behind. They feel much closer to equals than they feel like where Benjamin is Lashley's pin eater. And so that was reflected a little bit in the next segment. So MJF comes out and they do this whole segment where MJF, of course, wants to join the Hurt Syndicate. The guys outside of MVP aren't that excited about that. And MJF's like, I've got a friends in the back. And you assume that he's going to have like a wrestler come out and, you know, him and they're going to challenge the Hurt Syndicate to a match. But instead they play the Hurt Syndicate music, which was odd. And I was like, is this a mix up? But no, just some women come out that I guess are implied that they're sex workers that MJF has hired or MJF has contact with. And they do this whole segment where MJF, you know, offers these women to the Hurt Syndicate crew. He lets them join them. The Hurt Syndicate crew say no. MJF says, well, you can have the women anyway because I'm such a nice guy. But remember, I always get what I want. So they're continuing that saga. I thought it was kind of an odd segment. I thought like MJF facilitating sexual favors from these women to get something from these guys was kind of weird. I was like, did I just watch a human trafficking incident happen in front of me? So it was just, I thought it was kind of odd, but the live crowd ate it up. People were into it. They loved MJF in Boston. They thought the segment with the women was funny. They thought Shelton was funny when MVP was like asking him to focus. And I think sometimes people, this is something that I feel like is good to realize when you go to a live show, which is like a lot of times we're in our own little bubbles on social media or talking to our small group of wrestling buddies, and something like, oh, MJF doing comedy, MJF doing this, or oh, this is a dumb talking segment, oh, this is like a WWE segment. that becomes the main talking point that people have about stuff. And it's kind of like in this little silo that you're in. And I think everyone is guilty of this, including myself. Then you go to a live show and you see, whoa, MJF is getting a great reaction from the crowd. The Hurt Syndicate is getting a great reaction from the crowd. People are having a good time watching this segment. People are enjoying themselves. People are entertained. People think are laughing. This is something that's over, okay? I saw it with my own two eyes and my ears, more importantly. And I think sometimes we focus on like what we feel like the narrative is within our small group and kind of dismiss what that could mean for the whole. Now, I understand if this is not your cup of tea, that you don't like this. I'm never going to say, oh, you have to like this thing. But I think sometimes people talk about this like, oh, MJF is killing this company. It's like, that is so far from the truth. If you go to a live show. So I think that's part of the benefit of going to a live show. And one of those things you learn is kind of what the masses think, as opposed to just kind of what the circle of people you talk to think of. And like I said, I'm guilty of that too. I'm sure I'm guilty of assuming a lot of things based on just kind of a few people that I talk to and not really looking at the things that, in the bigger picture. But that was just something I thought of when I was watching that segment. Then we get to Will Ospreay versus Konosuke Takeshita. I was so excited for this match. I was so excited for this Dynamite and Collision taping because I have never seen Will Ospreay wrestle live. And I think everyone knows that I am a huge Will Ospreay fan. And so I was looking forward to really getting a chance to see him wrestle. And I was so happy that we got this match, Ospreay versus Takeshita, which was one of my favorite matches from last year. You just know it was going to be a banger. When I was watching this match, I was like, oh, so fortunate. This is the match I got to see live. You know, I would have been happy if he was just in like an 8-man tag match and he only did a few spots. The fact that I got this kind of singles match between Ospreay and Takeshita, who I've also never seen live. So this was fantastic, obviously. Has 9.17 on Cage Match. That seems kind of low to me. I don't like rating matches in general. I certainly don't like rating matches when I'm there live, but this was probably the best match I've ever seen live. And I was thinking about it now that I've seen Will Ospreay live, like who is the best wrestler that I have never seen live? And I've been fortunate. I've seen a lot of great wrestlers live, and there's a lot of wrestlers that I obviously never saw live. Like I never saw Kenta Kobashi live. I never saw Toshiaki Kawada live. But in terms of wrestlers that I kind of would have had an opportunity, or at least if we're have been wrestling or are active wrestlers now, I think it's probably Kento Miyahara. I would love to see a Kento Miyahara live match. It seems like it's something that's probably only going to happen if I go to Japan. But now that I've checked Ospreay and Takeshita off my bucket list, I feel very happy because this was a fantastic match. Probably not as good as their match last year, but their match last year is one of my favorite matches pretty much ever. So that's a tough one to top, but they tried really hard. This was everything you would expect it to be. Big moves, super exciting. The athleticism, the explosiveness, the back and forth. I mean, Ospreay is just, his catchphrase is like, I'm Will Ospreay and I'm on another level. And he really is. Now, I want to be fair to Takeshita because Takeshita's right there with him. But watching Ospreay live, he especially now that he's in AEW, he just has this crowd connection where people, he hits the ring and people think, I'm going to watch this guy do something great. And he does something great every single time out there. He reminds me of kind of like Nikola Jokic. Like if you go and watch an NBA game and you see Nikola Jokic is playing in it, you see him and you're like, this guy, whenever he gets the ball, he's going to do something brilliant. He's either going to make a really high percentage shot, or he's going to make a brilliant pass, or he's just going to move the ball in a way that's going to help his team succeed. And he does it every single night. That's kind of like what I feel like when I see Ospreay and what I feel like the crowd gets when they see Ospreay. It's like, this guy is going to deliver 100% of the time. He's not going to just be good. He's going to be the best person on the show. And that was the experience I had tonight. This was an amazing show. There were a lot of super talented people on here. I'm sure some people certainly, think the Mercedes Moné versus Athena match was better. That's fine. But I saw this match and I was like, these guys are just on another level. The back and forth nature, when the firing up in front of the crowd, the way that the crowd responded to both of these wrestlers was just so incredible to watch live. And getting to see it in a more intimate setting, right? This wasn't in a big basketball arena. This was in a smaller concert hall. And I was thinking, I've never been to Corican Hall, but I felt like this must be kind of what watching a great match at Corican Hall feels like, because it's this intimate setting. You're watching two of the absolute best wrestlers in the world, probably the two best wrestlers in the world, for being honest. Like, who are better than these two guys right now? It's probably nobody. They're probably 1-2 in some order. I think most people would say Takeshi's had a better year than Ospreay so far. So Takeshi's probably got the number one slot right now. But these are basically the two best wrestlers in the world. I think that's a pretty non-controversial statement to say. But these guys were fantastic. And this match was fantastic. And Ospreay won. Kind of sets up the story a little bit that Takeshi can't beat Ospreay. And so that's something in the long term that AEW can lean into, that Takeshita needs to beat Will Ospreay, because that's something that hasn't happened yet. And Ospreay advances to the finals of this Owen Hart tournament, and he's going to wrestle either Kyle Fletcher or Adam Page. The Page Fletcher match is interesting because it would seem kind of dumb to run back Fletcher and Ospreay right after you did that cage match, where I feel like was kind of the definitive end for that feud. And you're kind of headed for this collision course between Page and Ospreay, which is absolutely one of your biggest matches the company can do, and either guy can win. So you have that. It looks like you're probably going to get some sort of tag match. It wouldn't surprise me if you get like Fletcher and Takeshita versus Ospreay and Hangman. They obviously have a decent amount of time to build for these matches, since Double or Nothing is more than a month away. So, Ospreay has already, punched his ticket to Double or Nothing. So you're basically going to do the Hangman and Fletcher match maybe in like 2 weeks. And in the meantime, you can do this tag match or something like that. So I could see that happening. It's all really good stuff, because when you're talking about Page, Fletcher, Ospreay, and Takeshita, you're talking about four of the, six best wrestlers in the world. And they're all guys that are in their prime. They're all guys that are in either their early to mid-30s or in their 20s, like Takeshita and Fletcher are. So it's a really exciting time for those guys, really exciting time to be an AEW fan and seeing the kind of youth and talent that they have that are at the absolute top of their game. So we get that match, which is really funny, because that match goes on at like 9:20, which is kind of famous for being the kind of death slot, the designated one woman's match spot that Dynamite has. So it was kind of funny that they went with, this huge Ospreay Takeshita match, and that match goes a really long time. So then we really felt like that match should be the main event, but it's not. Our main event is the World Trios title match between the Ops, which are Shibata, Samoa Joe, and Powerhouse Hobbs, versus the Death Riders. Now, I don't know what happened here. I don't know why Hook wasn't in this match or there at all. I assume he was a late scratch for some reason. And so Shibata and Samoa Joe come out, and it's like they're just kind of standing there. And I'm just like, okay, Hook's going to come out, and they're going to give Hook a separate entrance, because Hook has his own special entrance with his music and his song and the lights and all that. And then Powerhouse Hobbs just comes out. And I was like, Powerhouse Hobbs, what is he doing? So I don't know. Maybe there was something backstage that I missed, but everyone in my section was also confused. Like, wait, where's Hook? Why is Powerhouse Hobbs coming out? What's going on? So that happened. Death Riders come out, and they have this match. And this was interesting, because I think a lot of people are tired and bored with Death Riders, but this was a match where I think what the Death Riders do worked. The crowd didn't like them. The crowd was rooting for the babyfaces. They hated Wheeler Yuta. They were giving Mox a ton of shit. They don't really boo Claudio, because Claudio is so awesome, but they were really into seeing the babyfaces beat the Death Riders. And for once, that actually happened, right? We got all of the schmoz stuff. This was like the typical House of Torture match where the baby faces finally get the edge over the House of Torture, and all of the attempts at the House of Torture cheating get foiled by various baby faces. This was basically that match, except the Death Riders were there instead of House of Torture. You had Willow come out and interfere and kind of neutralize Mox, try to use a chair. You had the Young Bucks come out trying to help them. You had Swerve come out saving, you know, the ops from the Young Bucks. Swerve like kind of got, you know, Swerve came out, you know, from the crowd, and he got a huge reaction from the crowd. Everyone was chanting Swerve's house. So he's didn't have a huge role in this show, but was certainly very over as pretty much anyone else. His double Swerve stomp on the Young Bucks off of the barricade looked awesome live. And then they go right to it. Samoa Joe puts Moxley right to sleep. The crowd was awesome for this. They popped so big for Samoa Joe. And look, Samoa Joe, I voted him for the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. And my case for Samoa Joe was this guy has just been consistently awesome whenever he's been given an opportunity to be awesome. And he's had to deal with a lot of really bad creative in his career because of the promotions he's worked for. But when you put Samoa Joe and say, hey, Joe, can you succeed in this position? He says yes every single time. He's been doing it for over 20 years now. He's been unbelievably consistent. His character hasn't evolved. He hasn't had to evolve. He's Samoa Joe. His character, he is a simple, direct, brilliant individual performer. And that was on full display tonight. You know, does he really make sense to be a guy to beat John Moxley? And it looks like, because he capped John Moxley out and stole these titles for him, that he's probably going to be the title contender at Double or Nothing. Does it really make sense for Samoa Joe, who's in his 40s, definitely on the downside of his career, to beat John Moxley for the world title? Absolutely not. But you know what? Didn't make sense for Samoa Joe to win the title earlier during his time at AEW last year. And he ended up winning the title anyway. So anything is possible with Samoa Joe, and I will get behind it at all times because I know how good this guy can be when he's just given a chance to be great. And tonight he was given a chance to be great, and the crowd responded in kind because they loved Samoa Joe. And I think this was a great opportunity for Powerhouse Hobbs. He's a guy that has been kind of a project for Tony and AEW, and you know, he's had some injuries. He's had some start and stop pushes. But I think he's really starting to hit his stride. He's over with the crowd. The crowd is really into him. And now he's got himself, you know, a title to have. And it's kind of like, I don't know what the deal is with him, you know, getting a spot over Hook and what's going on there. Maybe he kind of fell into it, but it's a good thing because I think it sends a good message. I think he's a guy where he's not a perfect performer. He has some weaknesses that he could shore up on, but he is a AEW original all the way. The fans believe in him. And I think that's something that's really powerful to have that the fans really in AEW, the fans really like their homegrown talent. They like other wrestlers that come from other companies, but I do think that there is a special connection, among the AEW fans with people like Hangman Page or with people like Powerhouse Hobbs or even people that really have never been pushed that much like Brody King. I think fans really enjoy seeing a wrestler that they really truly feel like is a creation of AEW. Those wrestlers have a special connection with the fan base, and Hobbs is one of those guys. So I don't know how far he can really go in the company. I don't know if he'll ever win the world title. But he's someone worth investing in, and I was happy to see him get this kind of opportunity. Show goes off the air. All of the random people come out. I assume these are people that are going to be working Collision tomorrow because a lot of these people, like Mike Bailey and Kevin Knight, were not really on the show. Tomohiro Ishii was there looking absolutely hilarious because it seemed like he didn't know what was going on as fans come out, as all the wrestlers come out and douse champagne. And this was like the Lex Luger beating Hulk Hogan ending, and kind of fitting given this was the Dynamite that passed Nitro. So that was all fun. And then at the very end of the show, Tony Khan comes out and he just says, you know, thanks everyone for showing up. He, you know, asks who's been here before, whose first time is this? He's done this on every show I've ever been to. Is Tony Khan comes out and he asks, is this your first show? Have you been here or have you been here before? And then he says, you know, thank you for 289 episodes, and here's to 289 more. And, you know, and then he goes, he's like, and we're going to keep doing Dynamite forever. And then he goes, forever, forever. And he's trying to get people to do the forever Terry Funk chants, like the Japanese crowd did in the 80s when Terry Funk announced his retirement, which obviously he didn't stick to. And but the crowd just didn't do that. But Tony was nonpulsed. He just, he wanted to do this in such a niche reference. And I just, I don't know how you could not love this guy, because he's such a wrestling dork that he's like, I want to go out there and I want to try to get the Terry Funk forever chant. And it didn't work, unfortunately. But he wanted to try to do that because he is a huge wrestling nerd. But that is basically a summary of my show. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to get to Collision tomorrow. The Collision card honestly doesn't look that great, but when I saw Tomohiro Ishii was going to be on the show tagging with Rocky Romero, I was like, ooh, I could see Ishii live again. But unfortunately, I'm going to have to work. But I thank everyone who's tuning in, and I'll talk to you again after a while.
Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.